Welcome to Open Book. I'm Richard Walensky. My guest is Ed Decker, who is the founder and artistic director of New Conservatory Theater Center in San Francisco, which has been around since 1996 to 97 was the very first season, at least on your website.
The conservatory started in 1981. The New Conservatory was originally a young artist training program. In 1985-86, we moved into 25 Van Ness, where we are now. And then in 1991, we took over that space, which is three theaters, did a rental thing for the first 4 or 5 years of managing that space. And then, as you said with the dates earlier, we began our Pride season in the mid-90s.
That's distinct from other shows that New Conservatory has at that site.
Yes, in that we also do family audience programs, and we also do in-school performance programs through our Youth Aware program, where public school kids from San Francisco come to our facility, and then we also go out from the facility and tour actually all around Northern California. We see about 20,000 kids a year with anti-bullying and HIV prevention education programs, nutrition programs, all using theater as the medium for teaching.
Ed Decker, let's talk a little about the Pride season. At present, we have two more days running of American Dream, which is an original play written for New Conservatory, correct?
Yes, it's had a long development process. The author is Brad Erickson, who also happens to be the executive director of Theater Bay Area in San Francisco. Brad and I have been working on the project for a couple of years. This is the second world premiere of Brad's that we produced. 6 or so years ago, we produced his play called The War at Home. And this play, as I said before, has been in progress for the last couple of years, and it's at long last made its world premiere.
It concerns gay marriage and issues surrounding gay marriage, which is kind of interesting because it incorporates material that must have occurred virtually during rehearsals of the show, which was the Supreme Court decision.
Thankfully, the Supreme Court decision happened 1 week before we were set to go into rehearsals. And with the decision, there were changes that needed to be made in our storyline. We ended up having to delay the rehearsal process by a week. Brad went into a rewrite mode, and hence we have a piece that straddles two time periods and is unique in this moment in history. The first act takes place just weeks before the Supreme Court decision came down, and the second half takes place about a month after the decision came down. So it was quite an extraordinary experience to be able to work on a story that was so in the moment. And we all of us on the creative team felt like we had a duty to make sure that we were as responsive and current as we possibly could be. The interesting thing about the play is that it also deals with binational relationships and, as a result, touches on some immigration issues between California and Mexico. So there's a lot wrapped up in this love story, not only matters of the heart, but also matters of public policy and politics.
The show has gotten very good reviews. Does he plan to take it elsewhere? Is there any future for American Dream?
Well, let's hope so. Our hope is that it, like all of our work, we can share it with other theaters and that there will be other productions across the country. Another reason why we wanted to make sure that the script was as current as possible so that it could be utilized by other companies around the United States in their hope to be responsive as well.
The other show at Decker that's opening at New Conservatory starts tonight with previews, which means next Thursday is a Pay What You Can preview?
That's correct. Every show in the Pride season, the Thursday preview is a Pay As You Wish night, so our guests can come one and come all and pay whatever admission price suits their budget.
And that show is Band Fags by Frank Avery Polito. That's based on a novel that he wrote?
Yes, Frank Anthony Polito. He wrote this novel, I want to think it's about 5 or 6 years ago. I became familiar with the novel, but I also knew Frank from I believe it was a reading that we did for another new work that we built based on a novel called Breakfast with Scott. And Frank actually was one of the actors that we had read a role in New York City several years ago, and we kept in contact over the years. And he shared his novel with me, and then subsequently he shared the stage adaptation of it.
And this is a original California premiere then? Or?
This will be the West Coast premiere. I think it's had one other production. I want to say it was in the Midwest, in Iowa. That's what I'm remembering, but I'm not 100% sure.
Well, most of the shows this season, not all of them, most of the shows in this Pride season are having their California or West Coast premiere. There's one original show and then a couple of older ones.
Mm-hmm.
When a show comes in for a California premiere, and, you know, New Conservatory is toward the beginning of a lot of shows rather than the final version. I mean, when these shows come in, are they revised for you?
If we're developing our own work, then we're very much at the beginning of the process, and a lot of changes happening at the theater when they're occurring. Usually, if we're doing second, third, or fourth production of a piece, the scripts are pretty well nailed down. Whenever possible, we have a line of communication with the playwrights, and if there are little tweaks or things that we notice, we might ask about them. But for the most part, like in the case of Band Fags, the script is done, and we are taking it in the form that it's in and producing the second production. There's a dynamic in the country that everybody likes the premiere. It's much harder to get the second or third production, and we want to be part of the movement that provides those extended opportunities for world premieres. And in fact, our own play that I think you saw last year, Rites of Passage, our international human rights play, we are still looking for a second production for that play.
New Conservatory focuses mostly on gay issues, not exclusively, but this seems to be a gay point in each show. In that context, how many other theater companies around the world or in the United States have similar focuses? I know that in the Bay Area, Rhino does, but outside of here, is there one or two in New York or Chicago? Or?
There's a handful around the country. I know right off the bat on the West Coast, the Diversionary Theater down in San Diego and the Celebration Theater in Los Angeles join us in our LGBT and allied content mission for the theater. And I do know that there are other theaters across the country, a handful of them that have this specific focus. I also noticed that around the country that a lot of theaters that are not specifically LGBT and allied identified are also producing work with LGBT and allied content. So things are opening up more so that all of our stories are finding their way to stages around America.
When you're looking for material to put on, we have a number of, like I said, West Coast or California or San Francisco premieres here. How do you get them? Do people send you scripts? Do you go to these different theaters? How do you find out about shows like Paris Letter or Yellow or Standing on Ceremony or The Homosexuals?
In a variety of ways. Thankfully, New Conservatory Theater Center is now known in the United States and a bit abroad for the work that we do. So I do receive quite a few inquiries from playwrights around the world, as well as submissions from literary agents and other writer managers and representatives. And I also do travel around Los Angeles, New York, Toronto, Chicago, London. Those are some of the primary places that I visit and work with various producers and agents as I, you know, look for new work to bring to New Conservatory Theater Center.
You're putting on My Beautiful Laundrette. Was that from seeing it in London?
That's a great question. My Beautiful Laundrette came as a result of – I have a colleague who runs a LGBT and allied theater in London called Above the Stag. And it's got that name because it used to be above a bar called The Stag. So hence Above the Stag. But a couple years ago, Peter Bull, my colleague, shared with me that he was going to be doing a stage adaptation of Morris, the E.M. Forster novel. We were fortunate a season ago to actually include Morris in our season as well. It was adapted by Andy Graham and Roger Parsley, and we had since become in contact with them, and they also did this adaptation of My Beautiful Laundrette. So once Morris happened at New Conservatory Theater Center, the dominoes began to fall, and we had the opportunity to continue our relationship with these playwrights and also to follow our production after the London production, which was last year.
We'll talk a little bit more about the upcoming season and some of the shows you're doing, but every time I talk to a different artistic director, I try to focus in on one or another area of theater, because I know that listing show after show can get really, you know, kind of boring. So we're going to talk a little about casting. How do you cast these things? To start with, when you're artistic director and they're casting, do you kind of sit in the back of the room while the director and the casting person are in front? I mean, how does that work for you?
Well, for me, it works. We have a brilliant young casting director. Her name is Lori Fowler, and she's responsible for quite a large task. We produce 10 shows in the Pride season, so there's some 50, 60 roles that need to be cast every year. So usually what happens for me is there is a general audition that the director and the casting director do, in which we open up the casting call, and actors come in and do their monologues.
I noticed that on the website you do have a listing of the shows and the auditions and what's required. So I saw that, and I assume it's at the normal places where people would look.
Absolutely. Places that that actors would be looking for work. There's the general process in which people are invited to submit their headshots and resumes and then are invited to come in for a general audition, which I said before is a monologue piece. Then once that process is complete, the field is narrowed down by the casting director and the director of the project, and then we have what we call a callback, and it's at that point that I join them in the theater and watch the callback, which usually consists of reading scenes from the play itself that they're auditioning for. And then I sit with the director and the casting director and throw in my artistic director 2 cents, and hopefully we come to quick consensus. The white smoke over the Vatican goes up and we have a cast.
Okay, a friend of mine who's an actor said that this is kind of how she sees it. There's the prepared audition and then reading from the script. And the prepared audition is basically to prove that you actually are an actor, pretty much. And then reading from the script. And that's kind of to make sure that the director can see if you're making clear choices and whether you can take direction and whether you are or aren't insane. Is that pretty much it?
I would say you've got that right in a right there. You've hit the nail on the head there. Absolutely, absolutely true. It is our hope that during the general audition that we will get to see all of those qualities and then some, especially with regards to the choices that the actor makes, especially when they are given ahead of time the information about the play that they're auditioning for. So how does the monologue that they bring in and how is it that they represent themselves in that context is kind of what we're looking for. And of course, the things that you mention about, you know, are they, you know, what is sort of their ability level? And, you know, as you said, are they insane or not? But, you know, in our business, a little insanity is not such a bad thing.
Well, the director also has to make sure that this is someone who will take direction, I would guess.
Absolutely. And you can begin to see that in the general audition. However, there are, I can't tell you how many times back when I was attending more of the general auditions, when you're seeing somebody for the first time, especially a young talent that's just beginning their career, you know, you have to look a little bit, perhaps a little bit deeper and harder, because there's a lot of nerves in an audition. You know, you've got 3 minutes to strut your stuff and make an impact, and sometimes it can be really unnerving, so we really try to make the environment as safe and nurturing as we possibly can, given those circumstances.
What role does chemistry between the actors play at that end? I mean, do you worry about that at all?
It plays a significant amount, I would think, especially when you get to the reading the scenes spot. It's a little tricky to tell because they're doing mostly cold readings. Sometimes they get the scenes ahead of time, but for the most part, they're meeting their fellow actors there at the audition for the first time. So sometimes you can tell right away if there's chemistry, but sometimes, just like in any relationship, it takes a little while for that to evolve.
What about if you pick the right people and then you put them on stage and you notice, uh-oh, no chemistry? What do you do? Are you stuck?
Well, you know, fortunately that rarely happens, so we choose very, very carefully. you know, sometimes, like I said, it takes a while for chemistry to evolve. And so working through that with actors, it's not an impossible thing to do. You can really build relationship. And especially since you have a storyline that you're working with in a context of character for folks to understand, it's usually malleable enough for it to grow as the rehearsal period goes on. I can't think of one instance where once we were cast, we were not able to sort of move that along. I can think of times when it was more difficult than others, but usually we choose fairly well. Knock on wood, let's hope that continues.
You're listening to an interview with Ed Decker, who's the artistic director of New Conservatory Theater in San Francisco, nctcsf.org online. I'm Richard Walensky on Open Book. Ed Decker, these are mostly gay scenes, gay sex scenes. I mean, there's some straight stuff in there, but it's mostly gay stuff. Does that ever become an issue in having a straight or gay actor?
It hasn't for some time. I know that in the early days of our producing LGBT theater, the sexual content was maybe a bit more explicit than it is now, because I think that sexuality has evolved in such a manner that it's often not so necessary to be as graphic and explicit on stage. The stories that are told are not primarily about sex. They're primarily about human nature and social and political issues of past, present, future. You know, the content of the play, most actors are very wise to know what they're coming. It's like going for a job application. You know what job you're applying for. So these days, I don't think it's so much, it's really not an issue.
I kind of get the feeling a lot of actors don't want to share whether they're straight or gay, because having the casting director not know means it's less relevant in their heads.
Well, you're right. And like any job, it's really not a relevant question or issue whether you're working in any circumstance. So we are working with folks based on their talent and the requirements of the particular story that needs to be told, and matching them up as an ensemble. Those are really things that are the priority for us. Anything that's related to gender or sexuality, those kinds of questions, they just don't even come into the equation.
Well, my actor friend asked a very interesting question. Have you ever made alternate casting choices, casting someone that kind of seemed a little bit not right, but it's an alternate casting choice, and you wondered if it was a big mistake, and then it turned out to be a great experience, or alternately, that it was a big mistake?
We're always looking to sort of open up the casting pool and cast against type, if you will. I'm sure you've heard that expression before. In American Dream, as a matter of fact, I know that Brad wrote the character of Salvador. In his mind's eye, he was written as sort of a diminutive physical type. As it turned out, we didn't cast somebody diminutive at all. We cast Ulysses Toledo, who's this very significant force and presence on stage, and it was very clear early on that the type didn't really matter. It's what mattered was an understanding of the heart of the character and the journey of the character. So although you do have to be conscious of type in certain circumstances, for the most part, I think you can break down those barriers and go off into different directions.
Do you think it's a little bit different, say, for community or regional theater in terms of going for or against type than it would be on a national stage where somebody might be a little bit more experienced?
Yeah, that may be true, and sometimes in the more commercial experience, you know, they're also looking for a name to lead at the box office. In the smaller theaters, because of the size of our houses, I mean, my largest is 120, 130 seats, and my smallest is 49 seats. So, you know, I don't think I'm going to have a name. You know, Nathan Lane is probably not going to do a long run at New Conservatory Theater Center.
Ed Decker, whenever we look at our playbills, we see little asterisks indicating someone is equity. They're in the union. Can you explain what the equity situation is in terms of New Conservatory, what it means?
Because of the sizes of our houses, we're largely a non-union house, but we do have an arrangement with Actors Equity that allows us during the course of our season to work with what we call, or what they call, guest artist contracts. And that allows us a couple times a year to bring artists in that are members of the union to work on our stages. For us, it's primarily a question of economics, that with such small houses and the runs that we do, which are typically at least 4 to 5 weeks long, 4 to 5 performances each week, and the ticket prices, you know, between $18 and $40, there are some limitations there that just are about economics. And at some point, we're hoping that we will have a larger, yet a fourth theater that will be a larger space where the economics will be more conducive to equity salaries.
Where would that theater be?
This is the good question at the moment. This is something that we are musing about as we look forward to our continued growth in San Francisco.
Ed Decker, how often do you fire an actor, if ever?
Richard, I can't remember the last time that has happened. It's a very, very rare occurrence. I would say in the 19 years of the Pride season, maybe once, maybe twice. I couldn't even tell you what show, if it had happened, what show that would have been. It would have been so long ago. We're just very, very careful. Now, we've had situations where life has happened and an actor, for whatever reason, has needed to pull back from the project. That's a different matter. But firing actors is not something that is a tradition in New Conservatory.
Well, what do you do about understudies if someone's sick?
This is a tough thing when you're running a small theater such as ours. It's very, very difficult to have the understudies in place. Again, it's a question of economics. We just don't have the salaries to expand the companies in those ways. So a lot of times we're kind of flying by the seat of our pants and hoping that we'll get through the 4 to 6 week run, without incident. And for the most part, we have. And there's been a couple times when an actor's had to go on with book. It happened last season in our production of Dear Harvey. But it was an ensemble production, so we were actually able to divide the roles up amongst the other actors. It was that kind of a play. But when it's more monologues and short scenes, you can do that. But when you have a through-line story where everybody's got the same character from beginning, middle, through end, it's a little bit more difficult to do.
So you're hoping that they just show up and just grind it out then?
We are, truth be told. Again, this is what is so important about making sure that you have a work environment that is pleasant and supportive, where all of the artists on stage and off enjoy coming to work.
One final question about this equity business. How much more are you paying them?
Depending on the project, the figures vary, but with the Actors Equity, you're also talking about extended health benefits. You have pension contributions that you need to make. And if you're working with an actor that perhaps is not in San Francisco, then you have to deal with per diems and housing as well if they don't live in the area. You know, the cost of it can vary.
How would you pick up somebody from out of town? I mean, if you're having these open auditions, would it have to be some kind of invitation then, right?
Possibly, but for example, we had the opportunity to work with an actor named Jim Brochu who came through town and worked at New Conservatory developing his piece about Zero Mostel a couple years ago. So that would be one of the ways in which we would work with a union actor if we were part of a project that was on its way east to he was off Broadway with it and we were sort of part of the process. And even though we were still in development, it was the showcase run, we made an arrangement with Actors Equity so that we could accommodate him.
I noticed you do have these three theaters. One of the theaters is very, very small, and it seems not to be used that much. That's like the cabaret-ish theater, right?
It used to be used more for cabaret, and when we revised our mission statement a couple years ago with our new strategic plan, we pulled back from our cabaret programs, and that space, the third space, is used primarily for our family matinee program. So when I see you at the theater, it's usually not when the family matinee programs are on.
One other question about casting, colorblind casting. How concerned are you, say, from a genetic standpoint? I mean, would you cast, say, a black person as the son or daughter of two white people without indicating they're adopted?
Well, that's a good question. My immediate response would be yes. I mean, if it serves the story in a way that is, you know, not taking the story someplace else, then absolutely. But I'm also thinking about, when you asked that question about the play that we're just getting ready to cast, My Beautiful Laundrette, which we were talking about earlier, which deals in particular with race between the Asian community and the white community in London. And there are certain requirements about that story that, in order to tell that story, you need to, I believe, you know, follow. It depends on the play. Usually when we go into casting, it's a colorblind situation. And audiences seem to appreciate that and embrace that as much as we do.
And how about gender blind, where the gender doesn't matter, like a lawyer?
As far as we're concerned, we don't have problems with that. Sometimes the playwrights or the folks that represent the work have very specific, you know, you can't do cross-gender casting. I'm trying to remember, we did a play a couple years ago called Legends, a comedy about Hollywood. I think it was a James Kirkwood. I hope I don't have that wrong. And we had thought about, instead of having two, you know, female divas, that we would do it with men instead of women. And the estate was not interested in having us do that. So they kind of said, no, the play was written as these two divas and we would like for it to stay that way. And of course we honor that. But we did think about it. In The Divine Sister, which closed out our season last year actually it was this year in June, but written by Charles Bush. Now, that particular piece, all of the roles could have been played by either gender. So it just depends on the play. And whenever we can, we kind of like to flip it and, you know, go for the unexpected.
And every time, I mean, I know that this has been controversial around the area, around the country. Every time you want to make any kind of change in the official play, you absolutely contact the people.
Yes.
Involved.
Yes, you have to do that. You know, it's somebody's art form, and you know, you wouldn't change the color of a painting or change the notes in a composition. So it's really important to sort of honor the various collaborators in our field and not just sort of take it upon yourself to unilaterally just start making changes in the script. Now, there are lots of opportunities with playwrights who see the need that perhaps their work could be updated if you're doing a revival and some changes, if you're not going to just do it strictly as a historical or period piece, and they're up for that, and you work together and you make that happen. But just going off on your own and doing that, that's really not something that's appropriate.
Ed Decker, a couple of plays that are coming up I want to ask you about. One is Standing on Ceremony, the gay marriage plays. What is that?
It's a collection of 8 short plays written by a variety of playwrights that looks at gay marriage from a lot of different angles, from a young person's perspective to the perspective of couples having been together for a really long time. That particular play will not only be part of our season, but it's also part of our Pride on Tour program, which is a new program that we started in partnership with the James Irvine Foundation a couple years ago, which takes one show from our Pride season out into areas outside of San Francisco. And our 3 areas are, we play in Grass Valley, Modesto, and Fresno. Just because the Supreme Court decision came down doesn't necessarily mean that a magic wand has been waved and all attitudes are lined up, that love is love and all of us deserve to live in dignity. So some of these stories still need to be told.
And Devil Boys from Beyond.
That is a play written by Buddy Thomas. It's the second play of his that we have produced. The first one was called The Crumple Zone, which was many seasons ago. And it is a sci-fi 50s spoof with a decidedly LGBT perspective. It's already been produced in New York. It's actually been waiting in the queue to be produced at New Conservatory for several years. We just don't always have all the production slots that we need. Even though we do 10 shows a year, there's still shows waiting in the queue to make it to the stage.
And that's also because you're kind of having to divide what's going to go in the bigger theater and what will go in the smaller theater too.
Exactly. And that's, you know, sort of curating that entire season between things that are just great fun, things that have a sort of a very strong political and social message, dramas, classics. You know, we really try to mix it up so that you're whenever you come to New Conservatory Theater Center, you're having a unique, distinct experience.
Ed Decker, what is this artisan residence program? I noticed there's a group called Hot Mess SF, which is there now, and earlier one is Ben Randall, who is now your publicity person.
See what happens? You get involved with New Conservatory, and we never let you leave. The artist,
it's like KPFA.
There you go. The artist in residence program is actually what we call our emerging artist program, and it's an opportunity to give at least one artist or a small company an opportunity to be in residence with us for a year or two to develop their own work. The Hot Mess Sketch Comedy Troupe is the first time that we have actually had a small company of writers and actors join us for a year to develop their art form. And in this case, it's a sketch comedy troupe. And it's a sort of a new direction for us. But we thought it would be worth and great fun. They've been guests, performers at New Conservatory before, and this year when we had the opening, Evan Johnson finished his residency that was directed by Ben Randall, who's also our publicist, his solo play Pansy, which is now preparing to tour across the U.S. and hopefully take over to the Dublin Gay Festival and the Edinburgh Festival next year.
And for you, Ed Decker, personally, are you directing any of these plays?
I will be directing Yellow by my friend Del Shores, which is coming up in the winter. Del is most famously known for his play called Sordid Lives, which has been also has a cult following as a movie. We've produced his play Southern Baptist Sissies at New Conservatory, and Yellow is a family drama, so it's a little bit of a it's got comedy too, but it's a little bit of a departure for Dell, I think.
Your play, Rites of Passage, as you said, you're looking for a second venue for it. Are you working on any other plays as a playwright?
My husband and I, Robert Leone, who wrote Rites of Passage with me, and I are actually going back to Bali to participate in the Ubud International Writer and Readers Festival, where we are going to be exploring some ideas for new plays. So stay tuned on that. And when I come back the next time, I'll tell you more.
American Dream is playing through Sunday at New Conservatory, and Band Fags tonight is the opening preview. Next Thursday is the Pay What You Can Afford program. And all of these shows, Pay What You Can Afford, is the Thursday after the preview opening, but before the official opening.
Yeah,
right?
The easy way to remember it is always the Thursday preview. And since there's only one Thursday preview in every run at, for the Pride season, you can't go wrong.
New Conservatory is located on Van Ness. And for more information, you can go to nctcsf.org. I'm Richard Walensky for Open Book.